Welcome to the Rock Music Alliance interview sessions. I am your host, Cole Coleman, along with keyboardist Claudio Pesavento from Mahogany Rush and the Chris Squire Band. On our show today, you know his guitar playing and vocals from the work he's done with Dennis DeYoung of Styx fame. And now he's striking out on his own. So welcome to our show, August Zadra.
Thank you very much, guys. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Yeah, thanks very much for coming on. Hey, first, I got to clear that up. Is it pronounced Zadra or?
It is. Thanks for asking. Before he went on, I was going, does he know how to pronounce that?
Yeah. Yeah, fortunately got it right. All right. So August, let's talk about your latest release. What's it called? When was it released? And what style is it like?
It's the title is Guiding Star. And of course, I have one right here to show you.
Excellent.
It's funny, a quick story on that. And you guys got to watch me. I start talking and it's like, rein him in. But I wanted to name this project. A quick backstory, actually. Frontiers had come to me probably 2016-ish about doing a solo album when I was playing with Dennis at the time. And I turned him down because, and they were kind of astonished. And said, I didn't feel enough confidence as the guy to do everything. I want to be the songwriter, the singer, the guitar player, put a band together, all that kind of thing. And so at that point, we had put another band together with myself and another singer, Rudy Cardenas, and that was called Waiting for Monday. That came out in February of 2020, which then 3 weeks later, the world, you know, went on standby mode. Yeah. So that thing got shelved pretty quickly. But at that point, they came back to me again, the first couple of weeks of the pandemic, and said, well, what about now? Like, you know, I've got a lot of time right now. Let's do it. So the album is called Guiding Star. It is produced by Alessandro Del Vecchio, who I had the pleasure of working with. He does a lot of work for Frontiers. He's an incredibly talented guy. I call him the one-man wrecking crew. And I will never tell anybody that I have a great songwriting talent. I'm starting from soup to nuts and giving you the whole package. Like a lot of guitar players, and I do still consider myself a guitar player first, we'll get back to that. I tend to write a lot of riffs or have, here's a chorus or here's a bridge or here's an outro section and not good at piecing everything together myself. So at one point, beginning of this process, I sent Alessandro 42 or 48 song ideas. Some were complete. Some were just a phrase here or there. And he's got a real knack for working with artists and pulling out the best of them as a producer and also knowing how to arrange things for their strength. He put a lot of things together, helped me piece these songs together. He'd send them back, back and forth with things. And I'm really happy with the way everything turned out.
Great. Well, that is the mark of a great producer. You know, if they're able to, you know, pull the greatness out of each artist as opposed to imposing a style on the artist, you know.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. Well said. And he does a lot of work for Frontiers where he basically does the entire project and writes and produces the whole thing. And then somebody just comes in and re-sings it. And I don't know how I feel about that. But in this case, and because a lot of people have asked me, oh, did he write every song on the record? I said, no, he co-wrote with me every song. And I think there's a couple of them that the percentages vary. But I sing every lead vocal on the album. I play all guitars except for two rhythm guitar parts. And I get a plug to my buddy Jeff Soto also, who sings backing vocals on every song but one. And it's kind of a payback. We're good friends, and he's had me sing on several of his last albums, doing backing vocals on a handful of songs. And so he was really instrumental also in getting me this deal with Frontiers. He's been with them a long time, and he's really good about, you know, he's been like a mentor and an advocate for me. And he really stepped up on this one, and he helped me write some lyrics for this and kind of arrange some things differently, and was very helpful. But I'm pleased with the way the record came out. It came out in February of 2022, so it's about a year and a half into its run, and I'm very excited to share it with everybody.
That's awesome, man. And, you know, we're back on songwriting. So you mentioned that the producer essentially co-wrote a lot of the stuff with you, but is there any other writing, any other co-writers on the album?
He has a couple of people he writes with. So he had brought some things in that were work that he had done with these other artists and brought it into me. And then I guess added my elements to it. But he's right. The primary co-writer with me.
Right. Now, you know, a lot of people, I'm thinking they're used to seeing you on, you know, doing guitar and some vocals with Dennis. But on this record, I definitely want to mention to everybody, you know, listening that, I mean, this is you doing all the lead vocal work as well as guitar work. And I got to say, you know, I was really surprised. You have a great voice.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a really strong, you know, frontman type of voice. It's a classic rock tenor voice, sort of similar to like Lou Gramm and Mick Thomas kind of rolled together into one voice, you know.
Could love that more.
It's a hell of a voice. I love it. And I had to ask, you know, with a voice as strong as yours, why haven't you done this before? You know, they've done a solo album or been fronting bands.
Yeah, here's something I wanted to get back to from earlier. Dennis has said to me several times over the years, he said, the first day I met him, we were talking, and he said, you know what your problem is? He said, you've always thought of yourself as a guitar player who sings. You should have been thinking as a singer who plays guitar, because then you might have, well, now you'd still be nowhere. That's just the way the universe works. But, you know, yeah. I went through that for a long time where I would be the guy in bands in the distant past. You know, I was always involved in writing, and a lot of times I would be the guy that sang the demos, and then we present it to the singer, because and we all know fantastic singers, and the guys that'll make women that'll make their hair stand up on your arms, right? And I think of those artists as singers, and I could give several examples. You named a couple already, but I've always thought of myself as a guy who hits the notes. I've never felt like a singer, and I'm not saying that to go, oh no, you're great. It's just, I think there's a difference.
Yeah,
I think that stems from being also an instrumentalist.
Yeah.
And you kind of, your focus is divided, and maybe you tend to relate more, in my case, to playing guitar.
Yeah.
So I always wanted someone else to step up and sing.
Well, a singer is like a frontman, basically, right?
Yes.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. I mean, you became a guitar player. You know, that was your first love, you know, but you have this talent as well. I mean, you have this wonderful voice instrument as well. So it's like at some point along the way, I would have been like, hey man, you know, with a voice like this, I'm fronting. I'm stepping out on the front.
It's funny you say that, because when I was playing with Mahogany and Rush, CBS Columbia wanted to get a singer. It looks good, like David Roth, whatever. And Frank Marino said, no, I'm the singer. And he played the guitar and sang at the same time.
one of the best singer guitar players of all time. Absolutely.
So does the producer, Alessandro, is he also a singer?
He is. He's a phenomenal vocalist. In fact, when he would send back some of the demos, I was taken aback. I mean, he sounds kind of like Tony Harnell from TNT. Super really? Strong, really high range. I'm like, bro, what do you need me for on this? Why don't I just play guitar? Again, back to thinking of myself as a guitarist. Like, why don't I just play guitar? We'll make it your album.
Yeah, it's amazing. Claudio and I were talking just a few minutes before you came on about how, you know, it's just amazing how many talented people are out there that you just never really hear much of. It's kind of like there's it's a matter of luck, or, you know, hitting the aligning the stars at the right moment to get out there, you know?
Yeah.
It's really something. But.
And like you mentioned, maybe before we started, talking about getting outside of how rock, you've been hearing it for years, and you know, rock is dead. And in some markets, that's absolutely true, sadly. But there's places where it's still thriving, and so that's why it's critical to have people like yourself that are spreading the word, evangelize for rock. You know, it's like,
rock is alive and well. That's one reason why we started this. Is I couldn't believe it when I was traveling the country, you know, selling my thimble slide. And you just get outside the major cities, and people, what I hear out there, people listening to is a lot of rock, some country crossover. I hear a lot of Van Halen.
Nice.
And I hear a lot of metal in Texas, you know, in the cities of Texas, people listen to metal, man. And you get over to Europe, and it's a lot of symphonic rock, and a lot of very advanced techno, not techno pop, but it's electronic metal, really, you know. There's like it's metal that's laced with electronics, you know, and it's really
good to see it evolving in that regard, right?
Yeah, it has continued to evolve in Europe, you know, I think here too in the States, but it hasn't been like I say, here in the States, it's no longer really promoted very, very much, you know.
Correct. That's I think the kicker. And one of the things I like to talk about with rock, you know, I'm assuming, you know, knowing some of your Claudio's background and just where your interests are, that you know, we have a strong classic rock background. And I think I talk about this a lot with bands from the 70s, that golden era from maybe, I don't know, 74 to 79-ish. And bands could just put out their vision of music. It didn't need to be called rock music, metal music, prog music. It was just, there were no limitations. And I think that created a lot of great art. And then as more money became involved and the labels started needing to promote it in certain ways and, you know, assign labels and pigeonhole things and really put restrictions on creativity in order to sell more. And I think that was a detriment to the music.
I think you're absolutely right, man. If you remember, like back then, we started calling it corporate rock.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think corporate rock has never really been embraced in Europe. Like a lot of the bands, you know, metal's huge there, pop is still huge there, and there's this kind of hybrid you're talking about. But the classic rock bands don't really do much business there, it seems.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're exactly right. And yeah, there's a lot of the music over there is still really artistic, you know. And in fact, I listen to it and I'm like, wow, man, you guys get to record this? This is awesome.
Right, right. And we're lucky to hear it.
Yeah. Hey, so when you're recording Guiding Star, what studios did you record in, or was it mostly at your own like private studios?
I can only speak for, I did all the vocals. I did 90% of the vocals in my home studio and 10% at a friend's studio. It's called the Institute of Noise. His name is Andy Zuckerman. He's great. Give him a little plug there, a fellow AZ. But, and I did all the guitars are actually recorded direct at home through a Fractal AX8. And I know that's a lot of purists will say, well, there's no tube amps on the records. But, you know, it's a lot of that is a factor of budget, you know, and I'm grateful that, you know, Frontiers, God bless them for so many things they're doing to keep rock alive. But, you know, they gave me a budget to work with where I was able to record these songs. And it's, to a large extent now, music is a labor of love because there's just not a lot of money, especially in the recorded aspect of it. But to have them say, here's, we'll arrange for you to be able to do this. How could I say no to that, right? But yeah, the lion's share was done in-house. And I know that Alessandro played bass on the album and all the keyboards. And he has a drummer that he worked with named Jelly Cardelli, which is one of the greatest names. And those are the drums we tracked live. But most of it is done, you know, in the box, so to speak.
Great, man. And at this point, are there plans to go on tour with this album?
It's a tricky question, and one I feel that enough to where I should have a better answer. But I would say this, I would welcome the opportunity to do it. But due to the touring landscape now, you know, it's really hard for a new artist to get involved, either buying onto a tour. You're playing tiny venues, and then the onus is on me to finance it, essentially. I have to find four or five other guys that or gals, whatever, that will believe in the music and be willing to work for pretty much nothing until we can grassroots this thing. And I don't want to sound so negative about that. You know, the opportunity and the possibilities still exist, but it's certainly getting harder.
You have to go out of the United States, probably, you know, because there's some countries that really... they're big on this too, you know, but like Japan or whatever, I don't know.
Right.
There are other markets that maybe you'll be able to play like a big festivals, you know. It all depends of, I don't know, management, I guess. I don't know.
Right.
A promotion.
And that's kind of a cliche we are familiar with too, is, you know, being big in Japan, so to speak. And, you know, there's so many, you know, it's a global market, right, for everything right now. So, it just might happen that all of a sudden I break out in Sweden or something. I'll play anywhere. That's what we always say.
Yeah, exactly.
Any opportunity.
You never know.
Right.
You mentioned Jeff Scott Soto on the album. He did a lot of the backing vocals.
He did backing vocals in every song but one.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's amazing. We hear his name pretty often over here at the Rock Music Alliance.
You know, I bet.
he's quite the fixture, and what a great voice. Great voice he's got.
Huge voice and just prolific with his output. And he has been consistently for the last 30 years. But his voice is so huge. There were times I'm like, can we pull that down a little bit? So you can, am I singing harmony with you? Or are you singing harmony with me?
You gotta put a muffler.
What's that?
You have to put a muffler.
Put a muffler. He said, you got to use a muffler with him. I say, let him go. Let the man go. Let him sing.
Yes.
What city are you based out of?
I'm in Sherman Oaks in the Valley, dude, in L.A.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, August, take us back to your beginnings and tell us, you know, where were you born and raised?
Wow. I was born in Fairbanks, Alaska, and the thriving musical metropolis, as it's well known for, not. But, you know, I grew up, my folks are both educators. My mom was a teacher. My dad was an administrator. And I have two brothers and a sister that the three of them all played in high school bands, for example, and in the band, not in bands outside of school, like we're in rock bands or anything.
Yeah, and I was the high school band. Yeah,
right, like trumpet and flute specifically. I was very involved. My older brother and I were both into baseball as kids, like most kids are, right? But keep in mind, I'm in a very small pond up there, and I had talent as a pitcher. And up until I was about 16 years old, I thought this is what I want to do, right? And I guess when I was 15, actually, I was introduced too early to trying to throw curveballs, and I injured my elbow. And specifically, I remember going to the doctor with my mom, and he said, well, you really shouldn't pitch anymore. You've done damage to it. Fractured a growth center in your elbow, was what he said. My mom said, you know, very innocently, well, what should he do now? And the doctor said, well, why don't you play guitar? I swear to God, I wish I knew who that guy was. I could go back and thank him. And there's been moments, there was certainly times in the first couple of years when, like a lot of new players, I was just literally obsessed and playing constantly and annoying everybody at home by playing poorly, you know. That. And I remember so many times we'd come home from church on Sunday and everybody else is downstairs, you know, watching football. And I'm in the room above in my room, rewinding Kiss solos over and over. It's like, and be like, don't you have it yet? You know, but there's that, you know, that's, and we can come back probably full circle that at some point. We're talking about the, you sound like an old man, get off my lawn, where it's like how much easier the learning process is now. But, you know, we all slowed down albums and rewound the cassette over and over.
Oh,
but
man, yeah.
I, you know, I had a tremendous passion for music. And I was, even when I was in high school, I was playing with guys that were 5-6 years older. And I was one of the classic stories of the funny story. You know, when I was playing with guys in college, I wasn't old enough to be in the bar. So the keyboard player's mother would vouch for me and get me in. And I had to go sit outside on the breaks and everything. But one thing led to another. And I moved to Dallas, Texas when I was 21. And I spent 3 years there. It's a long story that's not fit for today's discussion so much, but it basically is my formative years of getting out of LA, meeting a lot of fantastic players, getting in an original band, having the tiniest fraction of success, but really going nowhere, to eventually running out of money, calling home and saying, can I move back? And I went home and I was 24. And then I had my sights set on coming to LA and going to GIT, the Guitar Institute of Technology. So I spent a year in Alaska saving money. And on my 25th birthday, I came to LA and I did the 1 year course at GIT. It was phenomenal. I highly recommend it to anybody who's had the opportunity. I know that it's become exponentially more expensive every year, but at the time, it was such an immersive experience because I was hanging with players from all over the world that were guitar players, of course, also bass players, percussionists, keyboard players, singers. The environment was spectacular for learning. I was in an apartment in North Hollywood with like four guys. So half the time I was living at school, I'd be there 16, 18 hours a day because I didn't want to be in this cramped environment at home. I would throw I had like this guitar I had traded and bartered and whatever for it. And I'm getting this Squire Strat for $40. That became my school guitar. Cause I just no case, just throw it in the locker. I didn't care about it. I body slammed it a few times, but you would go to either video, you had video archives you could study from. There's, of course, lots of live performances. There was private counseling. So it was just a fantastic experience.
Right.
So yeah. I want to tell you something, going back to that, how you start to play guitar, because it happens similar to me. It happens that I was playing soccer and I broke my heel and I couldn't run like I used to run before. So right. I have a piano in my house and I started to cry on the piano, you know, like play by ear, you know, just one note at a time, like a black notes, you know.
Right.
That's how I started to play. That's it.
So are you exclusively self-taught or did you ever?
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't have to read chord changes, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. Attention guitar players, join the Thimble Slide Revolution and free your slide finger. The Thimble Slide is a mini guitar slide designed to be worn on the tip of your finger, about 3/4 the way down your fingernail. When worn there, you can still bend your finger, and most importantly, it's allowing enough of your fingertip through so you can press the guitar strings. The Thimble Slide is larger at the back and smaller at the front, so it follows the contour of your finger. So when you're wearing the slide, it's not loose or rattling around on your fingertip. This also allows your other fingertips in nice and close for playing. The sizing gap allows you to make the slide a little bit larger or a little bit smaller for a nice custom fit. So while you're wearing a Thimble Slide, you can, of course, use it as a slide. But more importantly, it allows you to still fret the strings so you can play the guitar. You can play chords. You can play lines while wearing it. You can bend strings with your ring finger. You can drag your fingertip across the strings if you need to. You can do pull-offs, hammer-ons. So there you go. You can actually still really do all the things you need to do to keep playing guitar. With its patented shape, you can slide and fret while wearing the Thimble Slide. Visit thimbleslide.com. That's thimbleslide.com. So August, when you first started, you know, playing guitar, so essentially your doctor kind of, you know, gave you the suggestion, but then you pick up the guitar, like who inspires you at that point? Like, you know, what bands and what guitar players ignited it in you?
First, before I even played guitar, it was one of the things, you know, they standing around with a tennis racket, jumping up and down, pretending. And it was the Frampton Comes Alive album. And then that morphed rather quickly into Kiss Alive. You know, I was a huge Ace Frehley fan. And then after that, the next jump for me to a more, I don't want to say advanced, that's the wrong way of viewing it, but a different style, the first Boston album was just absolutely monumental to me. And there was a couple of older guys in high school that I knew had played guitar a little bit. And my folks had bought me a $24.97 Sears guitar with nylon string. You know, action's this high, impossible to play at all. But I had this guitar, I knew these guys, and one of them said, I'll come over to your house and give you a guitar lesson if you help me get a date with your sister.
Ooh, wow.
How that happens. But and the very first song that he showed me how to play, and then when I wanted to learn, was More Than a Feeling. So wow. An interesting story there is that at some point, I think probably when I moved away the first time, when I moved to Texas, I left a bunch of albums behind. And at some point, things like baseball cards and albums all get absorbed by the other brothers kind of thing, right? And my younger brother, at one point, I went to go visit my older brother in the last 10 years. And he was going through some of the records and he said, hey, I think this belonged to August. And he said, oh, yeah, take it if you can get it to him sooner than I can. So it ended, my brother sent me the album, which I have actually probably fairly handy. But anyway, so I had the album again. It was just great to hold it in my hand and look at it. And then in 2016, we were with Dennis DeYoung. We toured with Boston. And I got Tom Scholz to autograph the record for me. And it's uh-huh. it's huge to me, you know. Yeah. And now the last 2 years, I've been playing with Tommy DiCarlo, who's the singer of Boston. And, you know, we play that song at every show, of course. And so it's really a full circle thing for me. And I cannot play that song without thinking back to how that original inspiration came to me.
It must be an incredible feeling, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's more than a feeling.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. It's more than a feeling.
It's more than a feeling. Course,
you know? It's more than a feeling.
You're dolling up the cheese factor. Seriously, right. My game.
So when you got into your 20s and you're down here in LA, did you ever do like the cover band scene, or was it just all originals all the time?
I had played in one kind of, you know, classic rock / top 40 band just for fun. It was, but the bulk of my time, I played original music until I think 1993 was my last original band, and everything was just kind of, you know, there's a kind of that early transitional period where metal had peaked, or, you know, the hair metal, if you will, all the hair bands had kind of peaked. And there was that time when, you know, Nirvana and the grunge scene came in and kind of
the grunge scene, right.
Thing. And I wasn't interested in that. In many ways, and this goes back to my earlier, you know, kind of learning period too, where if the band didn't have a great guitar player, or in my limited view or perspective, I wanted a guy who could play great guitar solos. I've come to realize that there's a lot more to guitar playing and songwriting, but there were bands that were great bands, and at great risk, I will say ELO is one of them, and a fantastic band of that period, but they didn't have guitar solos, so I was not interested. But so when grunge came in and the guitar took a back seat, at that point, I don't know how it, I think I'd seen it. Remember Music Connection magazine in LA?
Sure do.
There was an ad that was a Styx tribute band forming. And no, actually it was a Journey tribute band. And I called the number or whatnot and talked to somebody on the phone, and they said, well, the singer is a very famous guy and can't tell you who it is, but we're only doing phone auditions right now. So, you know, play me a couple songs. You do the Stone in Love solo. And I'm like, okay. And I did all that. And I sent in a tape and a cassette, and they came back with, he said, well, you know, we're going with somebody else and the singer's not sure what he wants to do right now, blah, blah, blah. But your voice reminds me of Tommy Shaw. And and then within a couple of weeks, I saw an ad for a Styx tribute band. And I thought, well, I'll go try out for that. Cause you know, even in high school or growing up, I'd sang in cover bands and done, it was always too much time on my hands, because it just happened to be, you know, cover bands is often a thing of, well, I need you to sing five songs, you sing five songs, and never, if you didn't have a de facto lead singer, everybody kind of chips in and you do what you can. And that was just something that, oh, my voice is fairly similar to that. It's not hard for me to sing that, so I'll do that. And tribute band, this was like in 95 or 6 probably, and in LA it was only, there was a Sheer Heart Attack, a great Queen tribute band, and of course the Atomic Punks. So we were, this Styx tribute band was called Grand Illusion, and it took a couple of months to get off the ground, but I became the Tommy Shaw guy in that band. And you know, we played around LA, we got a lot of great reviews. And then at some point, the other guitar player, he said, you know, I'm having fun with this tribute thing. I'd also like to do another band, and maybe you want to do that with me. And I'm like, well, what is it? He said, because it's Boston. And I'm like, good luck finding a singer. You know, yeah. 2 days later, he called me and said, I got the guy. So for a while, we were doing Boston and Styx tribute bands. So that, again, is part of a full circle thing for me, and which led to the last gig we did with, and these were on and off bands for years, but in 2004, I think, was the last gig I did in the Styx tribute band. And you know, I'm not an early adopter of any technology, but at this, you know, YouTube was already a thing, and a lot of people were, you know, doing either. Here's me playing a song at home, and we had video of our last gig that was at the Palo Casino near San Diego, and somebody in the band's girlfriend had set up it was Hi8 or something, right? But the video is very distant, but the audio quality was really good. And the band had a great show that night. And a couple months later, I'm like, oh, I'll digitize this and put it up on the YouTube like everyone's doing, right? And that is what led to me getting discovered, if you will, by Dennis. It was actually his son that, it's funny, I know I'm talking a lot here, sorry, that you go back to thinking about, I always say now that YouTube and the internet has become kind of like a farm club for classic rock bands, with the biggest example, of course, being Neil Sean and Journey discovering Arnell.
Yeah.
So it was not too long after that, that Dennis's son, Matt, was up late one night. He's an insomniac. And he was on YouTube, you know, Filipino Six tribute singer, because he just figured he'd find an Arnell guy. And he couldn't. So he just, you know how the YouTube rabbit hole on the side there is always other suggestions. And a couple of my videos had popped up. And he clicked on him, and the story is, he saw a couple songs, and he called Dennis. It was like 12:30 at night, and Dennis said, "There better be blood. Don't call me this late." You know? And he said, "Dad, you got to see this video." And that one thing led to another. And 2 months later, I got a call from Dennis's manager, and we talked for about an hour on the phone. And at the end of it, I said, "I felt great about this. It was really exciting and flattering and interesting." And I said, "What happens next?" And he said, "Well, you know, if Dennis is interested, you'll hear from him." So the next morning I get a phone call, and, you know, my daughter was like, "Hey, is Dennis somebody on the phone?" And I guess this is Dennis DeYoung. I was like, "Oh my God."
Yeah, that's amazing. No, that's good timing, because my very next question was, you know, how did you get the gig with Dennis DeYoung? So it's great to hear the story. Yes. And I, you know, I just have to, you know, brings up images of that movie, Rockstar.
Rockstar.
Yeah. It's yep. Just, it's the classic thing. It's amazing.
A lot of parallels.
It's amazing, yeah. But it really does happen that way now, like these days, you know, it does actually happen that way. Absolutely. When these bands need a player, they turn to YouTube.
And I also think, it legitimizes in a lot of ways, tribute bands, because these you know, at my audition, and it wasn't really an audition, he basically said, "Dennis doesn't trust technology," very famously, right? The problem is plain to see, too much technology. But he said, "I see the videos. I hear what you're doing. I see you're a performer. You can play guitar and you sing. But if you can come out here and sit on the piano bench with me and sound like that, and we make that sound together, then you got the gig."
Yeah, good one, Dennis. If you're watching, hey, that's good.
Yeah,
you got to have it in real life, man.
Old school.
Yeah, but it's true though. It's like you gotta. Okay, it looks great on video. Prove it.
Right. You know, and that goes back to, you know, one of my personal pet peeves. You know, with Dennis, I want to say this: there's absolutely nothing in our live show that was tracked other than the beginning to Mr. Roboto. And there was one, and the end of Too Much Time with the alarm clock. Everything else, every note sang, every sound produced was live.
And it's great to be able to be free that way, you know.
Yes. Yeah. And I always encouraged him. He never did it, but I said, "You really need to be telling people this at the show. This is all the sound. Everything you're hearing is being created by the guys on stage." And not to go too far off on a tangent, but you know how commonplace it is now for tracks to be extensively used. And there's a lot of people, Eddie Trunk, I think primarily, and I love him for this, rails against that. And they're Kelly Hansen recently calling out a lot of these classic rock bands where it's like, because Kelly said with the Foreigner material, how demanding it is for, on the vocalist. He said, "I don't want to be doing these songs unless I can do them at my you know, full ability, because that's what people deserve." And there's too many instances of, you know, I would call it the just press play syndrome. It's like, you know, if I want to just listen to the music, I can do that at home. Or, you know, I want to live.
Kelly's a great singer.
Yes, he is.
I was in a band with him, like when I first moved to LA in 1999, 2000.
Very cool. I didn't know that.
It was called Heaven and Earth. I don't know if you were here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, he recorded and he played live, you know.
Yeah, a lot of great players in and out of that band.
We had two singers, too. We have Kelly Killian and we have...
He's phenomenal as well.
Who else?
Was it Glenn Hughes involved at one point?
Yeah, he recorded the album, yeah. Recorded a couple of songs, yeah.
Can't get any better than that.
Well, yeah, guys, we have just a few minutes left, so I just want to hit a few more questions. We'll just blast for a few quick questions. I just curious, in all of the playing so far, since you're working with Dennis DeYoung and all that, have you met up with Tommy Shaw?
I have not. I had a couple of opportunities before joining Dennis's band where it was a at the NAMM show kind of thing. It's like, hey, Tommy's over there. I can try to connect you guys. It never worked out. I would welcome any opportunity. You know, there's a lot of divisiveness in a lot of these classic rock bands, where there's multiple versions of the band touring. And it's sad, because specifically, I'll try to be quick here. In our case, you know, people say, I only want to see the Tommy band. I hate Dennis. I only want to see Dennis. I hate Tommy. It's two bands playing largely the same catalog, and just enjoy it for what it is. I'm not, and I always say, I'm not trying to be Tommy. I get a lot of flack. People say, oh, he's just a Tommy clone. Do you hear it on my album? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I don't hear it. Yeah.
You know, it's just something, I got hired to play a role. And so I deliver those songs. I love the material. I was in a Styx tribute band, of course. So it's, you know, I try to give them, to deliver with the most respect, authenticity, and energy that I can. Could be, I'm in Dennis's band because I like Styx. You know, that's how
hold
that happened.
Hold on.
You know,
got it.
Hold on. I have somebody on the phone. Hey,
you got Tommy. On the phone? Hi, Tommy.
Tommy. Yeah. Say hi.
Yeah. Hey, Tommy. here's a quick fun fact for you. Tommy and I have the same birthday.
Oh.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, it is a coincidence.
9/11.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that must be rough.
9/11. Wow.
Yeah. You'll never forget it now.
So we got a few more questions. We'll just try to get through them. Just wanted to find out, how about a quick update on the band Waiting for Monday? You know, like, is that going to continue, or what's happening?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. The quick story is that when it happened originally, we had the nucleus of the band was myself with Walter Eno, as mentioned earlier, and Rudy Cardenas, the vocalist. We all lived within 10 minutes of each other. And now it's, people's lives are busy with other projects. Walter lives in Pittsburgh now. And just the label has approached us a couple of times about doing another album. We weren't able to deliver something on their timeline. And without getting too far into the dirty laundry of it, we couldn't reach an acceptable arrangement. It could happen again in the future, but not in the near future.
Gotcha. And a quick shout out there to Walter Eno. Hey?
Absolutely.
I'm Rudy.
Yeah. One of the most talented guys I've ever met, and plays every instrument of the sun.
He's in my shape.
Yeah, he's also another guy whose name comes up here fairly often.
I bet.
So yeah. Jeff Scott Soto and Walter, you know, we hear people, they're doing a lot of work out there for people, you know. So do you have let's talk just a little bit about gear real quick here. Do you have a favorite guitar type, and what's your rig like?
My favorite guitar of all time is the Ernie Ball Music Man Axis. I have them behind me. It was originally known as the Eddie Van Halen model. And then when he left to go to Peavey, I think it was his first move, they redesigned it slightly and renamed it the Axis. And it was one of those things where it was probably 1996-ish, 97. Anyway, I was at one of the NAMM shows, saw one, it was beautiful. As soon as my hand touched the neck, it just felt like home. It's one of those things. And it's been I have three of them. It's my main guitar. I do also have Dave Amato is one of my buddies. He's a huge Gibson guy from REO Speedwagon. He gives me a lot of flack because I do have several Gibsons, but I also love Bernie guitars. They're a Japanese lawsuit model. I play those a lot with the Boston show with Tommy DiCarlo. My main rig for the last many years has been the Fractal AX8 for live and for recording. I just love that thing. It's the thing, you know, of course everyone loves tube amps and that immediacy and punch, but the consistency factor, it sounds so great every night and in every situation. There's very few adjustments you need to make. Front of house engineers love it. It's not temperamental. There's no tubes. There's no maintenance. It's beautiful.
Right. I'll tell you, so many players we've spoken with, I mean, they're switching over to either, you know, Fractal or Kemper, or they have been doing it for a long time. It's just so practical. And the technology has really gotten so good.
It's so close.
Yeah, it's like, and it just helps make life so much easier out there. You know, I know one touring player right now who is touring with a memory stick.
Really?
Yeah, well, they take their memory stick and they have, they bring out the back line, you know, per city that they're in, and just input that memory stick and they're good to go.
You know, it used to be just keyboard players that had that ability. Now guitar players are finally inheriting some of those gifts.
Yeah, that's great. Have you tried Kemper as well?
I have actually recorded with Kemper. Part of the Waiting for Monday record is done with Kemper. And I've never used one live, but I have sat in sessions with guys or live gigs and play through them, and they sound great. You know, a lot of guys use them. It's, the gear is all so good. You know, the Neural DSP, the Fractal, the Line 6 stuff, Kemper. Yeah. It comes down to, it's really the whoever's the user or the sound designer. You can make, it's hard to make any of those things sound bad. I could do it. But.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing at the last NAMM show. Neural had a booth near the Thimble Slide booth, you know, so I ran over to take a look at Neural, and it really isn't just incredible, you know. And for $100, you know, you can buy the setup of, you know, incredible guitar players, you know.
Right. It's amazing.
You can, for $100, you can download it to your DAW and be off and running. It's amazing.
I think I have three of their plugins. They're phenomenal sounding.
Yeah. Well, guys, it really does bring it to the end of the time. Claudio, did you have anything else with August? I think he's in a phone call.
I was going to say that the technology, I found out that keyboards go out of tune after all.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either, but they do. I thought it was guitars only, but...
That's funny. Hey, I want to give one quick shout out, again, back to the Guiding Star album, to Dennis DeYoung, who actually played a keyboard solo on the song Take My Hand, which is huge of him to do for me. I really appreciated that. And also my buddy from the Dennis DeYoung band, Jimmy Leahy, plays a brilliant acoustic guitar on one of the tracks as well. And then thank you to both of you guys for the opportunity to do this interview. Thanks for your interest. Thanks for your support of not just of me, but this music that we all love so much. We need more guys like you. Thank you.
Well, thanks, August, very much. And it is a great record. It's you know, well done. And you know, so anybody out there, you know, pop it on, give it a listen. And also, where can people be in touch with you, August?
On Facebook or Instagram, it's August Zadra Music. And I have a website, augustzadramusic.com or augustzadra.com will redirect. Thanks.
Excellent.
For that.
All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Appreciate it very much, guys.
I'm Cole Coleman, and for Claudio Pesavento, the Rock Music Alliance, and the RMA Awards, thanks for watching and listening. Visit us at rockmusicalliance.com and check out this year's RMA Awards for rock, metal, and progressive rock music.